Perek.
Yoel Perek Bez. Now, what we just said is that Yoel was forewarning the people that there was going to be a massive locust swarm that was going to come and destroy all of their fields. All the food was going to be taken. It was going to be bad for everybody, that everybody should be trembling in fear. That's what we said in Yoel Perek Aleph. We said that there might be a remnant to the fact that the Babylonians were going to come, that the other nations were going to come and try to destroy the Jews. We thought that might be a remnant to what we were talking about. Either way, now in Perek Bez, here's what it says. Tiku shofar b'tzion, you should blow the shofar in Tzion, v'ariyu b'har kachi, you should blow a trua on my holy mountain. All the people of the land should tremble. That day of God is going to come. It's going to be close. Now, there are three different explanations that you can use for this pasuk. The first explanation is, number one, this is the impending invasion of the locusts. So the locusts are coming. They're on their way there. It's going to be really, really bad. So the horn that's being blown is obviously the warning that everybody should watch out for what's going to happen. It's going to be really bad. So that's what it's going to be over here. In the times when people are fasting, usually they had chatzotzros. There was chatzotzros that they blew, meaning the regular, not a shofar, but like trumpets that they would blast with it to remind people of what was going on and to call everybody together. Regardless, he was warning them that this is going to be really bad. The Gezem, the Arba, the Yelik, and the Chasil would cause darkness after darkness after darkness, and it would be so terribly bad it was going to be there. The other way of looking at it is that we're referring to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. That the Churban Beis HaMikdash is coming, and therefore we should be sad that it's coming soon. Now, if it's Shmuel and Avi's son, the Beis HaMikdash had not even been built yet, let alone what was going to happen 410 years later. But nonetheless, it was a reference to that. That's the way the Abarbanel refers to. And according to Abarbanel, it also says that in the very, very end, there's going to be a mighty march against Yerushalayim, referring to Nebuchadnezzar, then again Edom, and finally Gog and Magog, and that's what it refers to. What are you going
to
say?
The Sirdas, David, Rashi, they're all alluding, the shofar is just a warning to do tshuva, nothing more than
meaning
that.
Referring to the locusts, and that's that. Right? The third explanation is that we're referring to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shemini Atzeres. That this is the reference to Rosh Hashanah. We already mentioned in Yom Kippur up above that we said that we have to sanctify a fast that was impossible to get Dalit up above in Perek Aleph, and calling an assembly together, that's referring to Atzeres, Shemini Atzeres, and getting everyone together. Either way, it's a reference to everybody doing tshuva and bringing themselves back. Now, plus days. Yom Kosh Vafel, Yom Anan Varafel. It's going to be a day of darkness and darkness, a day of clouds and clouds. Kishacha Perus Alaharim, like the morning, right, comes up against spreads out upon the mountains. Amrav, it's going to be like a huge nation, the Atzum, the very strong, there never was anything like it, there never will be anything like it for all the generations. As we said before, even though in Egypt there was a tremendous maka called Arba, that Arba was one species of locust that had taken over so badly that did crazy things in Mitzrayim. This is four species of locust, which never happens where it goes all together, and there has never been such ultimate destruction from the four things of locust that came together. There was one species, here is four species. That's the craziness. Plus a gimel. Lefan of Achla Ish. Before them, there's a fire that consumes Akra Talayit Lahava. And afterward, there is a little blaze that's going to flame as well. He got Eden, Ha'aretz Lefan of. Like the Garden of Eden, it's as if the land is in front of them and they're so happy to go into it. The Akra Mibar Shmama. But in the end, it's going to be absolute desolate wilderness. There's not even going to be anything left. In other words, the line is the locusts were so into the destruction, etc., they were brush fires that were caused when they lifted up from a place. Everything was so dry and the sun beat down upon them that it caused brush fires, like all over California. That was the idea behind it. That's how bad it was, and that even the best places that had so much stuff inside, it's going to be that way. According to the Abarbanel's explanation, referring to the base of Mikdash being destroyed, this refers to Bubbles Army. Bubbles Army is going to come in, they're going to take over everything, set fire to all the cities, and destroy everything altogether. And the line of there will be absolutely nothing left at the very end, Gamplita Lohaisalo, means even Gedalia Ben Achikam, the last governor of Eretz Yisrael, is going to be destroyed as well. Everybody will go.
You've never seen Bava be referred to as locust or anything like that. Aren't they the lion?
Not unless it's Yoel. Yoel is referring to the locust only because of how many there were. The multitude of Babylonians that had come in. Remember, the Babylonians also called in nations from everywhere else as well to come fight with them against Yisrael. That would be why they're locusts, because of how many there were. Now it says, Kemari Susim Marihu, they appear like horses. The same way the horses run into battle, that's the way it's going to appear. Either, again, it's referring to Babel, or it's part of the locust that they're all going to come in all as one. There is a pshat, a medrash, that says the locusts were the size of horses, which is awesome, but very, very hard to understand.
Cool. Yeah,
that would be awesome. That would be awesome, right? Just like, I'm here for you. They run like horsemen. That's what they're supposed to be over here. Like the sound of chariots on the heads of the mountains, that's what they're going to sound like. That's the noise that they're going to dance, so to speak. Like the noise of a flaming fire. Oh, look, kosh, the way that it consumes straw, you know what I'm saying, like that crackling sound that goes through, like a big nation that is waging war. Now again, if this is referring to bubble, then obviously we know what that means. If not, then it refers to somehow how the locusts came in and how they dance, so to speak, in the air,
dance,
and they go through.
Dance.
Have you ever seen a locust swarm? Ever seen it? You ever seen like a little thing?
Have you ever
one
seen
time,
before?
One time, when I was in Ibeaco, when I was second or third, oh, it might have been year in Israel. Might have been you and Eretz Yisrael. It was my second or third year in Eretz Yisrael. I was in my dorms in Ibeaco, and they said there was going to be a locust swarm the next day. And it was but not over Jerusalem. It was going to be over Jordan. Now, we, from Ibeaco, you could see, you know, into Jordan. So it was the coolest thing in the world. It was all yellow. The whole day was yellow. And then further off, you saw it was complete darkness. It was unbelievable darkness. And you just saw this swarm. And by us, you still saw these locusts that were jumping. Like, there were still locusts around, but it was like one locust. It wasn't anywhere around. It wasn't like a huge swarm. But you could see the swarm going around. It's the coolest thing. And we could see it from far away. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen before in my life. But it literally was dark as anything. You saw it was black as night over there. And by us, it was all yellow. Everything was yellow. It looked sandish. Because there was something in there. What? That is a little bit of an issue. Because the Ramban says that locusts do not go to Egypt. Ever since Makas Arba, because Moshe Rabbeinu davened. Now, I have, there's a whole big thing. No, supposedly they don't damage anything, but I have seen quite often where people will say that they surround Egypt. There were many locust swarms there though, so how do we understand the Ramban? I don't know what's going on in Chamyon. However you want to learn it, I don't know what you want to do. Here, grab this one.
Answers what I want.
I am sorry. I don't have an answer for that. So in Pasuk Hey, we just said that. I'm sorry. Pasuk Vav. Mipanav Yechilu Amin. From their presence, the nations will be in anguish. They'll be scared. Kopam Kibtzu Parur. All their faces are gathered in darkness. In other words, they turn black out of fear and turn out of dread. They're so scared of all these locusts and everything. Kigiborim Yerutzun. Kachimokam Yalu. So like strong men, they're going to run into the locusts. Like the men of war, they're going to come up Homa. They're going to go up upon the wall. Each man will go in their proper way. They're not going to cross their paths. Now, this pasuk seems to be clear. It's referring to the Babylonians and not referring to locusts. When we refer to men that are traveling in a certain direction, it seems clear we're referring to the Babylonians and not locusts themselves. However, it's possible that we're just comparing the locusts to invaders of a city. The same way that invaders of a city come in and climb the walls, etc., that's how the locusts are going to come inside. What?
Who was Yoel?
We had a machlokus. Either it was Yoel, was the son of Shmuel and Abi. He was one of the two sons of Shmuel and Abi that took over with the Navi, which is very hard to say because that means he was before Davin, before the Beis Hamikdash was around, or Yoel was a Navi who lived toward the times of Chizkiah, around the times of Menashe, and around that time, we're not positive. If he was the son of Shmuel and Avi, then the famine that he's referring to with all the locusts happened during the days of David and Melech, which is hard for us to understand. We know there was a 3-year famine, but it doesn't say anything about locusts and the Navi, right? But it's a possibility. Otherwise, it happened at an unspecified time when the Jews were punished with locusts, but it does not say when specifically it was. The Ishachib will yichakun, nor one person does not push against the other. Meaning, normally, when you have a bunch of people that are stampeding, you know, check out when they do those things in Mecca, everybody runs against the other and everybody just tramples one another and everything's like that, right? If you ever look at ants somehow never run over one another. They never trample each other. They all go up and they find a way. Everybody has a certain path that they go on. And there are ants that do that. In fact, the coolest ants are the fire ants that are able to climb on top of each other and they survive in floods.
You see that
in water. Oh, so cool. Right? But they do have
on
that.
On top of each other.
Yeah. But they keep floating. They turn around, right? They turn around while in the water and they all float and they survive. Coolest thing you've ever seen in your life. Though. So yes, there are things like that. But the point is that ants are able to survive with some type of octus that allows them to all be in their special way, all like that. Locusts
are the ants
same way.
Though?
I'm sorry?
How come ants aren't closed?
They're not mentioned in the stories being closed.
No, it's just boom. No. I'm saying they seem to have good meatos. You know, like
only one. Hard work. That's it. You'd be a hardworking mongoose. So
I was told that the mother ant queen secretes
love. Toxins?
No, like how bees communicate with each other, like
pheromones.
And it makes them.
You ever read the book Ender's Game?
Sick book.
Okay, yeah, that's the idea, the concept behind it. Anyway, but yeah, but either way, but here we're saying each locust knew exactly where to go, or if it's running the Babylonian army, each Babylonian soldier knew exactly what to do. They go in their own path. Right, they fall upon the javelin, but they are not wounded. Meaning they don't care. The invading locusts, because they're God's messengers, are willing to do whatever they need to do in order to survive, even though they get no tangible gain for their effort. The amazing thing about ants is that the soldiers, meaning the regular workers, are willing to do what they need to do because the queen tells them to. It doesn't matter that they're gaining nothing from it. That either the Babylonians did the same, that they were willing to do whatever they needed to do and even sacrifice their lives for the sake of their kingdom, for the sake of Babylonia, or if not that, then it refers to the locusts, that the locusts were similar to the way that the ants were. Now, pasuk text. But ir yoshoku, they dash around the city, and they run up the wall, they go into the houses, they come into the windows like a gun if they run inside. Okay, so again, either it's in front of the Babylonians that are making a huge noise and going in everywhere and taking whatever it is, right? But the funny thing about the Babylonians was that normally when marauding warriors come inside and they know that they took the city, the first thing they do is they go for money, food, drink, and the woman. It's the first thing they do. The Babylonians just wanted to kill. They were bloodthirsty and went in for the kill and did not stop to do any of the other things that other armies did. And that's the line over here. They just kept going in like a gun and grabbing whatever, just destroying wherever they could go. If it's referring to the locusts, then it's an obvious shot that they went in everywhere. They were able to penetrate even inside the houses. The fun of rugs that Eretz were Ashu, right before them, the earth quakes. Rashu Shamayim, the heaven shakes as well. They blackened the sun and the moon, the Kochavim Asu. Even the stars gather in their light, so to speak. If it's locusts, then naturally the whole sun and the moon were blocked, and it says maybe there was an earthquake at the exact same time. We don't know. There might have been an earthquake that happened at the exact same time over there. If it's referring to Babel, then it's a supernatural darkness darkening, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, as if I don't want my sun and moon to shine anymore because I hate the Babylonians or what they're doing so much. What's up?
What if the shot of Babel undermines the explanation of this? Prophecy happened at the time of God, I don't know.
No, it's not undermining anything. It's just another, it's a prophecy all for the future. So, meaning everything's going on something else entirely, and although we're using it in pshat, meaning that there's a pshat, there's going to be a locust swarm, etc., he's using it to explain to the people this is all a remnant to what's going to happen in the future. That's the idea behind it.
For the time to talk about, like, basically
the destruction. I know. That's what we just did, literally just before you came. We just said that. Yes, it's strange. It's Yoel ben Shmuel. It's strange. There's no question.
It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, it is very difficult. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu yells out his voice in front of the army. Because the camp is very, very great. For those who execute his word, in other words, doing his word, are very mighty because they were given permission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do this work. How great is that day of the Lord? How awesome is it going to be? Who's going to be able to handle it? And that's what it means, that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is he let out his voice, refers to the prophets. The Nevi'im are going to come along and tell them what's happening over here and what's been going on. And it says that if you listen to me and you do tshuva, then you'll be able to be saved. Because Gadol Yom HaShem, that day of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where everything should happen correctly, that is going to be stronger than anything else that's out there. Okay, that's that. There is a line they use over here. It's from the Miamloi. It says that Pinchas was able to save his entire nation by going up against Zimri and Cosby and killing both of them before the plague started on Klal Yisrael. And even though there was a plague afterward that killed some of them, Pinchas' power was able to stop the plague from getting any worse. That's the idea, that one man can be a tzaddik enough to be able to save an entire nation. Even now, says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, Shubu Adai, the Cholam Akam, turn back to me with all of your hearts. You should fast, you should weep, and you should give hespedim. So I remember Rabbi Cohen talking about this years ago. Mispade is the word that we use all over the place. We use it in Megillas Esther, we use it all over the place. What does it mean to give hespedim? Nobody's dead. How do you give hespedim when they're alive? So I've always understood it the following way. I don't remember which one is which. There's the word eulogy and the word elegy. I don't remember which is which. I think I remember that elegy is what you say for the dead, and a eulogy is the word that you say for the dead or for someone alive when you're praising him for his work that has already been done. I don't know. It might be the opposite way. If you want to check it out, check it out. E-U-L-O-G-Y.
Yeah, that's what you said.
I think elegy is the proper term that's used for it, but it might have been the opposite. I remember my English teacher calling it to me.
Merriam-Webster seems to think that elegy is an inscription, especially on the tombstone, archaic characterization, or biographical sketch, especially in praise, a funeral oration,
That's very amazing that you know this even without using a phone in the basement or something.
No,
but what about eulogy? Eulogy is supposedly
for birth. It's a Greek phrase, so I would assume that you were correct.
Yeah, I think
especially
it's
especially one who recently died or retired.
That's how they use it. I think they use it for that. I remember this from years ago. I think Mr. Turritilli. I don't think you ever had him.
Yeah.
Mr. Turritilli always told me, elegy is used for the dead and eulogy is for both. But people use it in the wrong version. I almost always remember that. So I always thought that me spade meant literally eulogy, that they were praising the tzaddikim and what they've done, as if to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, we still have done things. We've done things. We can do more. The idea is that they fasted, they cried, and they gave eulogies saying what the person does. I think that's the pshat behind it, of how you understand hasped. And I think that's what Rabbi Cohen meant as well. The famous line, you should tear your heart, not your clothing. It's the same line that they use regarding the people of Nineveh when Yonah gets out there. Forget about your clothing. It's not about tearing your clothing and showing mourning on the outside. It's about tearing your hearts and trying to build yourself up again. The same way that a person, in order to build up his muscles, has to tear his previous muscles in order for the muscles to become bigger. The only way for a person's heart to be redone, I'm not saying I do it, I'm just saying that that's the theory thereof.
Well,
right?
The tearing actually happened, but no, the rebuilding.
But the idea is, hey, that's not but that idea of you should tear your heart to be able to become greater, that idea is how you should do it. And then it says, v'shuvo Hashem Elokechem, then you do tshuva to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kichanev Rachamu, because he is gracious and merciful. Erech HaPayim Rav Chatzet, v'nicham Elorah. He is length of anger. In other words, he waits to be able to give back for what it was, and he has tremendous chatzet, and he consoles for the evil that he says. If a person has that regret, etc., then you'll find that the hour is in your favor, that things will happen well. Pasuk Yudala, miyodea yashuv v'nicham. Who knows? Let him return. Let him come back. Then he'll leave after him some type of a bracha, mincha v'nesach, some type of a gift and libation, l'Hashem Elokechem, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that will be. In other words, do not bring a korban before you're ready to do this. If a person brings a korban before they're ready to cry and do tshuva, you're wasting your time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want it. He wants you to do tshuva first and then bring the korban. Tiku shofar b'tzion kachu tzom kiru ashara. This is the line that we said before, refers to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and Sheni Atzeres. Blow on the shofar in Tzion, make it into a fast day, call it out as a cessation of work for everybody to go through and for the people to start getting around. It seems that there might be different lines over here, that each time it's referring to something different. The Amloi says that earlier we're referring to the Nevi'im to ready themselves, then we're referring to the holy people, and now referring to even the people themselves should get involved. Isfu am, gather all the people together. Kachukol, sanctify the whole kahal. Keep to the kingdom, gather all the kingdom. Isfu alalam, even the young children, the young keshadayim, even the babies. Yetze chosim echadro, bring out the chosim from his cheder, from his room, the kalam echupasa, and the kalam from echupa, meaning even though it's in their sheva brachos, bring everybody out, make everybody fast together, and everybody should go. Now, this is so that a qualified elder gets up there, a zakin gets up there, in order to give everybody muster, to be able to tell everybody what they've done wrong and what we're going to have to work on, etc. But one elder is not going to be good enough. You need to gather all the zakenim, gather everybody together to be there together. If still that's not enough, then grab the children who can cry, because we all know that when children are crying together, that obviously makes a tremendous impression on a Kodesh Baruch Hu. If even that's not enough, then even the little babies, make them scream out loud by not giving them food in time. That's the idea behind it. Even those children, little babies dying of hunger is the worst thing that could happen. Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
No, when the mothers eat the babies, that's worse.
Well, yeah, but that hasn't happened yet. And the final thing is that the chosin and the kala, who weren't even able to have kids, look, they're starting their life over together, and now they're going to die. That line should get people as well. Personally, I would think that the little babies are more effective in order to get people to do tshuva than the chosin and the kala coming out from their area. But I guess you could say either one. I'm sorry?
Wouldn't you say the opposite?
I don't know. I mean, that's the line that the man always uses, and he quotes it from the Abarbanel. I don't know exactly, but... You know,
one's knocking out a lifetime, one's knocking out a family.
Right. Right. It's because they're brand new. I don't know. Pasuk Yudzayin. Be'ne'ulam alim is back. Okay, so now, Be'ne'ulam is back. Yivko akwanim ashor tesham. Let the Kohanim, who are those who serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let them cry between the ulam and the mizbeach, as if there's no korbanos to be brought, because everybody, there's no food left. V'yomru chus hasham lamecha. They're going to say, let God have pity on your people. Al titein akolasa l'kherpo. Do not allow your nachla to be degraded. Limsho b'mgoyim. So that all the nations take over. Lo miyum rabamim ayeloheim. Why should the nations say, where is their God? That's the famous line from Moshe. Moshavim, and that idea over here. Now, over here he gives a mashal. I really should have mentioned it before. I forgot that it's over here, but he puts this a little bit out of order. We said that the Zakenim have a chiyuv to inspire the people. So he said a mashal over here. A man was arrested by the government, falsely accused, and thrown into prison. The man protested, and he said, I'm innocent, right? But the minister in charge of these matters lived elsewhere, and he couldn't get his ear. He couldn't tell him whatsoever. So he was told, it was said later on, that there was going to be a trade fair in that minister's city, and many people were going to go from the city where this guy was in jail to the city where this guy was. So relatives of the prisoner approached the traders, the people that were going to go to this trade fair, and they asked them to present a petition to the minister so the minister could take care of all this. They wanted the innocent guy to be set free. So when they went there, the traders went about their business. They did whatever they were supposed to do. They had no time to deal with the matter. Finally, when they had finished all of their transactions and everything was done and they were ready to go back to their hotel, right, other people, like they said, you know what, now it's probably time for us to go to the minister. Let's go and take care of it. Right? That's the idea behind it. So the line is, that's the muscle that's given, and finally go to the minister or whatever it is. We took too long to go about what we were supposed to do. We had the idea of, we were the traders, so to speak. We're supposed to be able to represent, the Zakenim especially, supposed to represent what Bnei Yisrael and Klal Yisrael are supposed to do. And they were sitting there like, yeah, we'll do it a little later. And finally came to the point where you can't wait any longer. If you just quit now, then you totally messed out on what you're doing here in the first place, right? And that's the idea that the Zakenim have to be involved, and that's the idea behind it. The Kohanim especially should be there, and the Kohanim should say, look, we're going to lose our jobs. If we can't bring korbanos, then what's the point of us being here in the first place? We have to be involved. We got to be involved with all this. And that's the idea why they started weeping in the morning, meaning the Kohanim more than anybody else. Pasuk Yuchas, that Kanish Ma'arz V'Yachmel Lamoa, Kodesh Baruch Hu was zealous for this land, and he had pity upon his nation itself. Pasuk Yuchas, V'Yan Hashem V'Yom Lamoi, Kodesh Baruch Hu said to his nation, Yishol Lech Lecham Tzedogam Atirish V'Yitzor, I'm going to give you the grain, the wine, and the oil. Svatim Ozo, you're going to be satisfied with it. Lo Etein has come Odecher Pabagayim, I'm not going to make you a mockery among the nations anymore. That's a tzfoni. And the Tzfoni, again, two ways of looking at it, either those from the north, which represents Babel, the Babylonians and all those nations from up north, and I know, technically, it's really to the east. What? Really, the Babylonians
to the east, sure,
come from the north. Ashur is the other pshat that's mentioned over here, right? The Tzfoni is probably, again, according to our whole medrash that we've been dealing with up until now, that we're darshaning, this is referring to Babel coming after them, it makes sense referring to Babel, but the Tzfoni was over there. I'll keep them away from you. Pashat pshat is referring to the locusts, right? I'm sorry? Not yet. Perk Dalet is going to be Mashiach. He's going to bring Mashiach eventually. No, they're not coming yet.
We're
going to see. It's not going to be a war. I'm going to push them away to the land that is thirsty and the land that is destroyed. In front of all Yama Kadmoni, their faces will be to the eastern sea. The Sopal Yama Achron, their end will be in the sea that's all the way to the end. Vala Basho, it's going to smell. And the smell is going to rise from their dead bodies. The stench is going to be there because he has done great things with them. Now, again, if it's referring to the locusts, that's obvious, right? A Kushbal is going to take away the locust. Why Tzfoni is referring to the locust? Maybe the locust came from the north. Maybe that's the pshat behind it, and that's what it refers to. Another pshat is that it's referring to Ashur. That's what Rashi says over there as well, that the Assyrians, when they come down, that they're going to be taken away, their bodies are going to smell. That refers to all the Assyrians that were killed when the Malach came down and killed however many it was, 150,000 of the, whatever it was, and only Sennacherib survived. It refers to Babylonia. We don't understand it at all, because Babel was not destroyed in that fashion. They were destroyed later on by Persians and Medes, but they really survived. Most of them survived. That's a very, very difficult thing to say. The last shot is the Gemara in Sukkah Nun Beis that says it refers to the Yetzer Hara.
Right.
It refers to the Yetzer Hara, that the Yetzer Hara will be destroyed, and that its stench will go out there, so to speak. It's referring to the Leviathan that we're supposed to eat from. The Leviathan is that snake, the sea snake that represents the Satan in the sea.
It's a big fish.
It's a huge snake fish. Do you want to call that a whale? Because a whale might look like a huge snake that lives in the sea. I don't know. What do you want to call it? But it's a huge snake that lives in the sea. What's that?
It doesn't make sense.
50% of the world.
50% of the world?
That says you don't have one, according to your...
No. It doesn't say a size.
It's a natural desire.
No. I gave a share on the Leviathan 3 years ago on Shavuos. Remember, there's no sizes given. It says that it's a
natural desire.
That it's a huge creature. But we don't have any idea how big it is. It doesn't say that anywhere. It's all the way down.
Well, maybe it's saying that you're going to get punched.
I just...
It's a medrash. It doesn't fit with the rest of the pasukim.
Yeah.
It can't fit, meaning we're not dealing with shot-wise in the pasuk. What we're doing is extrapolating from this to be able to take it around.
You said it's a medrash.
Oh, don't give me that. Don't give me that, all right? I still think that this is not a shot idea, even if you want to say that this medrash, like, yes, it could be that in the end of days that the Yetzirah is going to be shechted, so to speak, and we're going to eat from it. Whatever that medrash means, right, there's no question that's not shot in the pasuk at all. We're not referring to the Yetzirah in any which way. It's just that's the measures, the extrapolation from the text in order to teach you what it's going to be.
In modern Hebrew, a tzfoni is a snob.
A tzfoni is a snob?
Yeah.
That's cute. No, for sure not. Man, that's cute though. I like that. Pasuk Kafalot, Al Tiri Adama, do not be afraid of the ground, right? That's referring to the locusts themselves. Don't be afraid of the ground. Gili Usmachi, you should be happy and rejoice, because God is going to do awesome things. Al Tiru Bahamos Sodai, do not be afraid of animals of the field. Ki Doshuna Osmin Bor, because the deserts will sprout out with grass. Ki Eitz Nasapirio, because the trees will give of its fruit. To Ainam Agefen Nasum Chelam, the figs and the grapevines will give forth of its fruits. The people of Zion, they're going to be happy in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it will give them their first rains, and it will be righteousness. And you will have the rain fall down for you, the early rains and the late rains in the first month. This is the pasuk that's mentioned in Tainus. What does that mean? The Yoreh, the early rains happen in Cheshvan. That's when they're supposed to come in. The late rains happen in Adar. That's when they're supposed to come in. Nisan is when all the rains stop. Yoreh and Malkush, if it doesn't rain by Rosh Chodesh Kislev, that's when you already start fasting. Some say you already start fasting by Yud Zayin Cheshvan. Some say by Chav Gimel Cheshvan. Right? But for sure, by Rosh Chodesh Kislev, it still happens in Eretz Yisrael today. They do that. I'm sorry?
It's pretty funny. It's Rosh Chodesh Kislev. It's raining outside.
That's great. You hear. Unfortunately, we're not sending this to Eretz Yisrael, but you know,
it was raining in Israel.
It was?
Yeah, like a couple weeks ago, it was pouring. They had
flooding.
I didn't make that an issue.
It makes rain more than that's great.
They got to the year's worth, like in that rain.
Oh, that's awesome.
A year.
A year.
Yeah, and last year, the year before, they got some good rain.
They did get some good rain. Listen, they need more. It should be more. The Kinneret has a Kinneret took a lot off. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. California also got a bunch of rain. San Diego was raining on Sunday. Yeah.
I was there.
So, anyway, no, I heard on the radio that they were saying that it was raining right before the game started. Anyway, regardless, it says Yoreh u'Malkush Barishon. Yoel was saying that at that time, at that date, the Yoreh and the Malkush both happen in the first month. It's an amazing medrash, says the Gemara. This is what ended up happening. What ended up happening in that first time was like this. The rains came in the first month of Nisan. The people were starving and they had absolutely nothing to eat. They had nothing left except for the little bits of seeds and grain that they had. So Yoel went up to them and said, right after it rained the first time, the ground was softened. He told them, take your seeds, plant them in the ground. The people said, do you want us to plant the seeds in the ground? Because if we do, we're going to have no food at all. We're all going to die of hunger. We literally have nothing left. What do you want us to do? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yes. Take the seeds, Yoel said, take the seeds, put them in the ground, you'll be perfectly fine. After they put the seeds inside the ground, immediately they found all the grain that was hidden inside the mouse holes and rat holes that were in their houses, and they were able to survive from all the grain that they had for the next couple days. The next day, it rained again after they planted the seeds in the ground. It rained again. It rained for the next 3 days. It's all in Nisan. I forgot the dates exactly. It might have been 6th, 7th, 8th or something like that. I don't know if it says it somewhere. But it happened for the next 3 days. And as the ox was going ahead and going with the seeds, right, as it was planting, it says, as it was going, it was crying. The ox was crying out of hunger. It was carrying the seeds. As it turned around and went in the other direction, it was already happy because the grass started to grow from the ground. It was immediate satisfaction. They saw the grain growing immediately. And that month, even though it only started raining in Nisan, even though they only planted on the 6th or whatever it is of the month, it might have been the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of the month, they already were able to bring the Korban Omer on the 16th of the month. Korban Omer, the barley which usually grows in 6 months, ended up growing in only 11 days. Very good. That's exactly the Gemara that I'm referring to over here. And that's what it is. But it's all from, we say it in our Shir HaMelech. That line of Shir HaMelech, the drush, is for what happens by Yoel. And Yoel is telling them, plant. I want you to plant. You'll be fine. You don't have to worry about anything.
Third time, once Mashiach.
You know, it's a geula, yes, but they use that drush for this, so I don't know.
When we learn to know.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good call. Like, what are we doing? All right, here we go. Umolua granos bor. So all the threshing floors are going to be filled with grain. The yishikwa yakub, and all the vats are going to overflow with the with tirosh and yitzor, with wine and oil. You're going to see that it's going to happen so quickly. I'm going to pay you back for all those years that were eaten by all the locusts. For the great army that has sent up against you, for all those things that ended up happening. And according to Targum Yonasan, now starts the most Mashiach. I'm going to pay you back for all those years in the days of Mashiach. You can eat enough to be able to be satisfied. You're going to praise the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that has done wondrous things for you. And no longer will my people be ashamed ever again. Now, this is a strange mashal, but you have to hear it because we don't have too many mashalim about foxes. The fox ate of the game that was killed by the lion. The lion summoned him into judgment. So why did you eat of my game? Said the lion. So the fox said, I was seized by a terrible hunger. A thief who steals out of hunger should not be dealt with very harshly. So the lion said, prove that you are hungry. Prove to me that you are hungry. And then he threw him into prison. From the prison, the fox saw the lion eating game. He said, I see you are satiated. You must be full. He said to the lion, why do you keep eating? If you keep eating, the food is only going to harm you. So the lion said, how do you know what goes on inside my stomach? How do you know if I'm hungry or not?
Oh.
Said the fox, if I can't prove to you how I know this, how can I prove that I was hungry? Okay, so that's the idea behind it. So the idea is, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're not going to have to chase after luxuries. You're going to have, very good, that's true. But you will not have to chase after luxuries. That everything will be there and you'll have just enough. Some say that these two can refer to when it refers to the food and you'll be satisfied. It refers to Torah and mitzvahs, that you'll be so filled with Torah and mitzvahs. It's going to be as if you have that chip in your brain that has everything in it. You'll have your own little otzer achochma inside your head, that you'll have everything inside there. It'll be as if you have everything. Others say it refers to the fact that we want to be yitzhara at that time, right? Others say it refers to the lechem aponim, that every time they ate from the lechem aponim, they were considered satisfied. Either way, that's the idea behind it. There's another mashal. We don't have to do this mashal over here. And also, there are those that say that it refers to mun itself. Pasukhav Zayin. Midyatem. You should know, keep a karbi Yisrael on me, that I am with Bnei Yisrael. No one else will help you, and I promise you that my people will never be embarrassed again. Now it says that pasuk again, the exact same thing, that my people will not be embarrassed again, to show that one is going to be at the time when Geula happens, and the other one is going to be in the times of Tekiyas HaMeisim. There's going to be most of Mashiach and Tekiyas HaMeisim. At both times, there's going to be something where Bnei Yisrael gets something special. According to one of the Pirushim that the Ma'amoris brings, it refers to specific Hashkacha process that Bnei Yisrael has over every other nation. That although there is some sort of Hashkacha process that every nation has, there's a different sort of Hashkacha process that applies to Bnei Yisrael, that we have something a little bit more. Now, at this point on, Yoel seems to be talking about the Emos of Mashiach, or at least what's going to happen by the times of the future Geula. Maybe it's referring to the Geula after Babel, right, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, but it seems more that we're referring to the very, very end. I'm going to send my spirit upon all flesh. Your sons and your daughters will give nebuos. Your elders will have dreams. And your young men will see visions. That's what's going to happen. That every single person will be a conduit of Hashkacha, in which everybody will have their own chef and their ability to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu if they have it. Now, if you notice, obviously there's going to be three different types of prophecy that are given. The youngest among them, those that are born into this special nation, the ones among them will have true nevuah, absolute nevuah. The elders who have seen much and have been involved with much sin and much things that have been wrong, those people are only going to see dreams. That's the most they're going to be able to get, because their minds are not able to be able to handle much more than that. The young men, who were still, they hadn't sinned as much, but yet they were still not innocent completely, they were going to have visions, which not exactly in a vua, but it's not going to be the other thing as well. That's the idea behind it. There was going to be, and more than that, according to the Amelies, it refers to an awareness, that everybody will be aware that there is an HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is out there, that he's taking care of things as well. That's the idea behind it, and that's what we're referring to over here. Now next, even the servants and the maidservants, the people that are not considered cautious, even they will sit and prophesy. Remember the last time we said something like this, even a shifcha on the yam was able to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What were the Jews, by Kriyas Yamsuf, how in the world did they have slaves and maidservants? They were slaves themselves.
Maybe the Arab rats?
It's a good call. I never thought of that. That's not the answer that's given.
So everybody has a hierarchy. Just because they were slaves themselves, it doesn't mean that they didn't have a system.
It refers, you are correct, it refers to the people that are of a lower caste. The people that did not, is it caste or caste? Yeah. Caste. It's spelled caste, right, with an E at the very end? Okay, of a lower caste, they consider themselves, you know, the lowest thing. Even they, the lowest of the low, still be able to. Maybe that refers to Arab brothers.
Sorry, the lower caste.
The people that I guess you can consider, like, even among slaves, there was a hierarchy of which ones are the good ones and the bad ones.
And we know what the rule of union
is. Yeah, no, somebody from, I don't want to say it this way, but maybe from Shevet Dan, that was considered them Aste from the lowest of Dan.
Maybe it was like Amayuria.
It'd be hard to say they had Alma Ibrahim before the Torah.
Why? Somebody didn't have, somebody was, I mean, poorer than
they were all
a
friar.
Right, they were all
Egyptian.
Always a problem. There were different, levels.
With Erebus, that's what he was saying. I hear what you're saying. I don't have anything against that. But I think there still was a hierarchy. I think you're right. You mentioned Amram. I believe that's correct as well. Plus a Gimel. But it's not the most much mind of I will make wonders in the heavens and the earth. Dam va'esh v'simro zasha. Oh, very good. That now obviously is referring to the war of Gog and Magog, where the world is going to be darkened. The moon will be crimson like blood. That's what's going to happen over here. Okay, so according to the Rambam, this is referring to what's going to happen prior to the defeat of Gog and Magog, that there's going to be that. Chazal tell us this is going to happen for a very short time, based on a pasuk in Yeshaya and Parakal Vav, that it's going to be an extremely short time when it's going to be bad times for all the Jews. In other words, I'm sorry? But I mean, this maybe is more red than it was. I wasn't very impressed with that red blood or that blood moon over there. And regardless, Dumba Ish Vistim Vazashim refers to the blood of the people that are spilled, the Ish, the fires that will rage throughout the entire earth, and the Timros Ashan is the pillars of smoke that rise into the sky. Now, in Pashup Shot, that means from the fires that were out there. In another way, that refers to, well, let's hope it's not. Let's hope it's not. But referring to some type of an atom bomb, a bomb that goes through. That's what they all call it. The Timros Ashan. The line is Timros Ashan. The word is Tamar. Tamar is a date or palm tree. You all know what a palm tree looks like. It's supposed to be a smokestack that goes up and then pillows out. That's the line that they use for Timros Ashan. Now, you're right. We don't know that. I don't remember who it was that says it. It might be over here and I just didn't look it up. But the Rishonim here say that Timros Ashan refers to somehow a mushroom cloud, and they wouldn't have had any idea how to make a mushroom cloud. We know that that happens through some type of a bomb, a crazy bomb that goes through. Hopefully it is.
7 years is not a large amount of time.
Hopefully it is. Hopefully it is. Maybe it is. And if it is, then Baruch Hashem, that was the war of Gog and Magog. Somehow we're just waiting for it. Could be. Yeah. Maybe that's how they knew what Timros Ashan looked like. Oh, very good. Maybe a volcanic eruption. You know what? Just go. But either way, regardless, that could be very well what it's referring to. But regardless, the word Timros Ashan is a very, very scary word to go through with our world today, how it's going to work. Again, we've talked about this before, that we can't understand, when we were going through Yeshaya and Yecheskel, can't understand how it would be the wars that they're describing as the war of Gog and Magog. The war of Gog and Magog, in which people are just fighting against each other, as if that our warfare is not the warfare of 100 years ago or 200 years ago. It's just not the same thing. What's the war going to be like? We have absolutely no idea. Perhaps this is a description of what it's going to be in some way that we can understand a little bit better. Unfortunately.
Timros Ashan.
Timros, right. And also, the line also, as I said before, that it's going to take a few seconds. I mean, it's referring to a very short amount of time.
That's a scary thing as well. Seconds. Where does it say that in the pasuk?
The short time is referred. No, it's referred to Yeshaya Chavav. Yeshaya Chavav Pasuk Chav. And it refers over there. I don't know what that means. I highly doubt that Ruchai Kamsky said it.
You're saying it's just Facebook rumor.
I highly doubt Ruchai Kamsky said it. If he said it, then he said it for a reason, and the people are totally misunderstanding why he was saying it.
Told someone, apparently it's in the story, I don't know if it's
Tom
Holowski. Told someone not to travel to America.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
I
mean, it does.
I don't know.
No,
something else. I heard that it was a put on the loudspeakers. That was just.
I don't know what that is. Does not say whatever. It's not. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So you're dealing with a lot of people that are hoping. Listen. Let them come tomorrow. We'll all sit there and be like, Chaim Kanievsky was right. Bnei Brak was right. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's gonna have any complaints. I'm just saying we have to live our lives, right? Assuming that it's not gonna happen that way. Unfortunately, Yashemesh Yafeich. The sun will be turned into Lakosha. The sun will turn into darkness. Vayareach L'dam. The moon will turn into blood with Nebo Yom Hashem HaGadol HaNor before that awesome day, the terrible day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down and judges everybody. According to Abarbanel, this refers to a future war of Edom versus Yishmael. I did not look at the Abarbanel entirely inside, but he says that's what it refers to. The sun refers to Edom. Yishmael refers to the moon. And that there's going to be a massive war between the people of Edom and the people of Yishmael. Yishmael will be red as blood, meaning they're going to be bloodied all over, but unfortunately the sun will also be darkened, that although the Yishmaelim are not able to kill as much as Edom is able to kill them, they still turn it into darkness. They do something that makes darkness. If they have some type of weaponry that would go through, that also would make a little bit of sense, but hopefully it never has to happen. Anybody who calls up in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will escape that problem. Among hearts of Yerushalayim there will be a remnant, as God has said, that there are the remnants that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, those are going to call out loud. We have no idea what that means. Now, the idea...
Doesn't it mean like you want to escape atomic warfare? I mean, if you're using this interpretation we spoke about, go to Israel.
Yeah. And that's the scariest part, right? That's the line behind it. No one is safe in any other place except for Eretz Yisrael. And especially the way the Ruach Chaim has always put it, no one is safe except for that. But
there's,
you know what?
Story like somebody once before the World War II went to someone and he said, well, what should I do? He said, in the answer was, hard to say, please, go to Israel.
He told him that.
Somebody told someone, like, some rabbi, I have one of the stories here. And so he said, he's telling me to go to Israel. So he went to Israel. And, you know, the war never really reached Israel.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but okay, so this is all for the future, right? Kibar,
it's clear that that's what it's referring to. Yeah,
but there's no guarantee up until Mashiach that it's a safe place, so to speak.
No. Meaning until you move to Mashiach. You'd right. assume that by this time we're in the Emos Mashiach.
Yeah, but
I don't
you
know.
Say that once Mashiach comes, it's not going to be all grandy and dandy. You still got to get a job. You still got to work.
Well, the Rambam's shita is that Ein Bein Emos Mashiach Le'Olam Hazeh El Shibud Malchus. Bavad will be in charge of our Shibud Malchus, but everything else will be different. The Ramban, I don't say the Ramban. The Ramban's somewhat in Katakamach, but the way that the other Rishonim seem to say it is that it's going to change completely. It's going to be a different world. I don't know.
First
I don't
one,
know, we like the Rambam, but I'd really like the other Rishonim.
First one or second one?
Well, you look, Mashiach and Yosef. We're talking about Mashiach. Mashiach and Yosef.
Right.
Mashiach and Yosef is not included in that. So.
Mashiach and Yosef.
All right, so here we go. Kinei, Bayom Mahim Obeisa Yisrael, Ashev Yishvus Yehuda Yerushalayim. On those days, on those times, I'm going to bring back the returnees of Yehuda and Yerushalayim. Pretty awesome outside, right? Yeah, that's good.
Should we all go to Yisrael?
No, for right now we only have one that's open.
No, there's one right by the...
Oh, no, but it's going that way. You see the wind. I think we're okay, but it's quite fine. All right. It says over here, Abarbanel once again refers to this, referring to Edom. Listen to this. Edom is going to have in their minds, they're going to capture the land of Eretz Yisrael. According to Rashi, which in the time of Rashi, I'm sorry, not according to Rashi, which in the time of Rashi refers to the times of the Crusades, and they're going to try to destroy the Muslims that are in the temple, that are in that area completely. Now, that's an awesome shot that goes through. It does not. This is a reference that the Abarbanel refers to. Again, remember, the Abarbanel is saying that all of this is a reference to wars. So that's what he says.
Right, but I mean, like you said, Rashi was trying to make it to his time.
No, I'm sorry. It wasn't. He was in the times of Rashi. I didn't mean it that
right.
way.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm saying that throughout history, we see that you know people would
show them try to make it during their time
because they want to give hope to the people.
I get you. I don't think that's what the Abarbanel was doing.
But
the Abarbanel was saying that he refers to. I definitely hear you. Pasuk Beis, Vikivati Eskol Agoyim. I'm going to gather together all the nations. I'm going to bring them down to the Valley of Yoshaphat. Now, if this is Yoel ben Shmuel, this is obviously a reference to a valley that didn't exist yet. Yoshaphat was a king that happened much, much later on, so therefore it wouldn't be there. According to others, I would assume that that means that Yoel lived during the days of Yoshaphat, that Amic Yoshaphat existed.
Or could have been after Yoshaphat.
Very good.
He got his name.
According to one shot, Yoshaphat just means God will judge. The valley where God judges. And I'm going to judge everybody there. You know, there's a famous medrash that's brought down in Sanhedrin and Sadi Aleph and Beis. Yeah, Sadi Aleph and Beis, where it says that
Sadi Beis and Aleph, maybe?
Sadi Beis and Aleph?
Oh, I don't know. The Tolzaron was referencing
Oh, I don't think he brings his Fussick. That's interesting, actually. Maybe he does.
No, this time, sorry, it's for Fussick Hay.
Oh, no. So it's not here. It's something else.
Oh, that's,
yeah, this is something different. So the way it says it over there is like this. Antoninus asked Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Antoninus was Mark Antony. He was the emperor, two emperors after Hadrian. After Hadrian had passed away.
Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah. Isn't that the same person?
No, it's Marcus Aurelius and someone else.
Was Marcus Aurelius the guy in between? Was he an old emperor for like 2 years?
But that was the emperor that. But I think the person that Rabbi Yehuda is referring to is probably the governor of Palestine. I don't know if it was so much.
It could be, but Mark Antony, whatever Antony is,
was
supposed to be. Look it up if you can, Mark Antony. But I don't remember what it was.
He was the Cleopatra.
Look what was. Look after Hadrian. Give me the names.
Whatever.
Look it up.
That's what he said to you.
But the idea behind it. Look at what it said. Yeah, I know. That's why I just got to remember the names. I don't remember the names offhand. But Nishpati Imam, I'm going to judge them there. So they say it's the following: that it's a reference, and the whole idea is that here we go.
Marcus Aurelius was an emperor for 19 years.
Who was the one before him?
His predecessor was Antoninus Pius.
That might be it. Antoninus Pius?
What year did Rabbi Yehuda live?
180, 90, 200, something like that. Around those ages.
Marcus was 161 to 180, and Antoninus Pius was 138 to 161.
I guess it could be that time, because here's the deal. Rabbi Kiva died in the year 123.
Right.
Now it's only a question of when Rabbi Meir lived, and Rabbi Yehuda was a Talmud of Rabbi, So you have to figure out from there. So it very well could be.
Did Rabbi Akiva die in the same day Rabbi Yehuda was born? Is that...
Yeah, so if that does, then that makes sense. So you're dealing with that. That's a Gemara in Kiddushin. Correct. So that would make sense. 123. Right, either way, regardless.
How old did he live still?
Rabbi Yehuda Nasi?
Yeah.
Doesn't say, but he did live to an old age.
Has to be at least to 200.
No. Maybe to the earth. Maybe.
That's what the Mishnah was meant.
I don't know if I have to figure it out. Yeah, but that's circumspect because you're dealing with something. The Mishnah wasn't written down then. It was only compiled at that time. Either regardless, this is what it says over there. Antoninus asked Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the body and the soul can both potter themselves from din. The body can say, after we died, the body hasn't done anything. See, I don't sin. The soul can say, after I left the body, I didn't sin, so it's not my fault. So the soul can blame the body. The body is going to blame the soul. So how did they get judged for what they had done wrong? So he gave a muscle and he said, a blind man and a lame man were sent as guards to watch over the garden of the king. So both the blind man and the lame man went together. The lame man said, I see luscious fruits in there. So he told the blind man, put me on your shoulders. I'm going to tell you where to go. We'll eat the fruits of the field. They ate all the fruits of the field. When the guy came back along the field, he said to them, what happened to all the fruits of the field? The blind man said, I couldn't see any fruits. The lame man said, I couldn't walk to go get the fruits. So what did the guy do? So he took the blind man, put him on top of the took the lame man, put him on top of the blind man, and judged them together. So that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu said. He took the neshama, throws it into the guf, and judged them together. Says the Marsha, the true judgment of a person does not happen after you die, because that's only your neshama. The true judgment of a person is by tchias amesim, when the body and the soul are put back together, and then you're judged. And that's the reference. I am going to gather all the nations. I'm going to bring them back, and that's not Yisrael. Shirpizu bagoyim, that's arsi chileku. When I bring everybody back, that's when the ultimate judgment's going to happen. Ami yadugurol. For my people, I'm going to give them like lots. Vayino yelad batzoyna, or they are, this is referring to the people themselves. Ami yadugurol, they're going to make a lottery. Vayino yelad batzoyna, they're going to sell the young boys to be zonas. Vayalda makro b'yayim b'yishtu. The young girls, they're going to sell for wine, which they drank. They're going to serve them as slaves, etc. Vagamma atem li tzor b'tzidon. And then again, look at tzor and tzidon. The whole glue is and all the areas of pollution. Hagamul atem misham malai. Are you paying me back? Are you so angry with me, says God, that you're doing to the Jews because you hate me so much? I am going to give it right back upon your head. And that was the time Alexander the Great destroyed Sor and Sidon as well as the pollution. Because he took my silver and my gold, referring to the Bnei Yisrael. Machmadi atov, my precious people. You brought into your treasure, your temples, meaning referring to not only the people, but also my treasures that you brought into your own treasure houses. Then you sold the people of Yehuda and Yerushalayim to the people of the Greece, in order to keep them as far away as you could. The Ionians, they call them over here. The Ionians that you sold them to. I am going to take take them up in the place that you have sold them to, Osam Shama. I'm going to pay you back for all the things that you have done to my children. I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hands of the Bnei Yehuda. Meaning they're going to take all the remnants of Tzor and Sidon. And they're going to sell them to the nations that are far away. That is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has promised. Call this out among the nations. Sanctify a war. Summon a war. Bring out all the strongmen. Let all the war, the people of war, to be able to come up. This refers to all the warriors, all the people from Edom. They're going to come up. Kotu itechem. Beat down your plowshares. Lecharavos. Make them into swords. Mazmarosechem. Your pruning hooks. Lure malchem into spears. Hakolash. Yomar giborani. Even the weak will go along and say, I am so strong because I have all these things. These farmers turned soldiers are going to claim that they have all the strength, that they can do all these things. Ushuvavo. Quickly. Come. Kol agoyim isiv all the nations from Nifatsu Shama Hanchas Hashem Giborecha. And bring down all the mighty ones in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is referring to the third war, according to Baruch Hu, between Edom and Yishmal, the last one in which the common people will fight against each other. It will no longer be ultimate warriors or anything like that. It will be the regular people that's there. According to Baruch Hu, all of this is referring to Tchias Amesim, and it's a reference to what's going to happen. That's Sennacherib will be brought back to life, Nebuchadnezzar will be brought back to life, Titus will be brought back to life. We'll see how the Jews will come in, and then they're all dead. They all die.
There was a crusade of, there was like different groups. Like, they had the Farmers Crusade, they even had the Kids Crusade. I thought, like, you know, they don't have sin, so maybe they'll win.
How'd that do? Either way, Pasuk Yudbeis, Ye Oru V'Yalu, let them become aroused, let them go up, Agayim El Emek, Yoshav, the valley, Yoshav, Kisham, Ishav, Lishpodes, Kol Agayim Yisavi, that's where I'm going to judge everybody all around. I'm going to judge everyone for what they have done to Bnei Yisrael, to everyone around. This is in the times of Tchias HaMeisim, or at least in the times of the future. Shoku Magol, get rid of the sickle, Ki Voshal Kitzir, because the harvest is ripe. Bo Redu, come down, all the way down, Ki Molagas, Ki Shik, the wine press is full, and the baths are overflown, because their wickedness is so great. Multitudes in the valley of where this decision will be, because the day of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is near in that valley that's around there. On that day, once again, the sun and the moon are going to be darkened, all the stars are going to withdraw, everything, they're going to be dimmed completely, as if all everything is going to be destroyed. And then God calls out, roars out from Zion. Gives his voice, where Asher Shem, there will be an earthquake in the heavens and the earth. Hashem Matzal Amo, he will protect his nation. Ma'ozu Bnei Yisrael, he will be a stronghold for all Bnei Yisrael. Because you will know that I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shulchan B'tzion Har Kodshi. I live among Zion and my holy mountain. Voice Yerushalayim Kodesh Zarim Lo Yavru Ba'oyim. Yerushalayim will then be holy. No strangers will ever be there ever again. Anybody who they want to not go inside Yerushalayim will not be allowed into Yerushalayim itself. It will be on that day. Yitvo Harim Asis. The mountains will drip with Isis, or Isis is also sweet juice. That would be really cool. But whatever. But yeah, it's going to be dripping with sweet juice. The hills will be flowing down with milk. The assumption over here is that the grapes are going to be so great, and the dates and figs are going to be so great, that the wine and the milk that flows from the burst ones are going to be so great, it's going to flow down as in rivers from the mountains. All the hills of Yehuda, the brooks of Yehuda, will be filled with water. There will be a spring coming out from the base of Mikdash. It will water the Nachal Shittim. Remember Nachal Shittim? Nachal Shittim was the area in which the people drank from, and they did znus with the people. According to some of the Mephoshim, Nachal Shittim was a place where the Sultan ruled. That's why Shittim is the gematria of Sultan. By the times of Baal Peor. Right, by the times of the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, Nachal Shittim is outside of our Tzral. Here, Nachal Shittim will be healed, so to speak. All the evil waters that are out there that cause people to sin, that will be healed, and everything will be good. There will be a ruchni water that will be put inside of everything. Good water, everything, that will not succumb to depravity, we'll call it. Mitzrayim l'shmama tiyeh, Mitzrayim will be destroyed completely. Edom l'mibar shmama, Edom will be a desert of destruction. Tiyach mechamas b'nei Yehuda, it will be because of the violence that they did to the people of Yehuda, Shashafu dum nati bar some, because they spilled the blood in their land. It's crazy, right? It's like a king whose son was taken captive by bandits. The king went forth and he saved his son. He killed all the bandits. The son kept telling over to his father what the bandits did again and again and again. And every time he told them that, the king wanted to kill the bandits again. Even though the Mitzrayim were already paid back pretty badly for what they had done with the Makos and all of Yetzias Mitzrayim, etc., every time Bnei Yisrael go through again and again what the Mitzrayim did to us, every Pesach, HaKadosh Baruch wants to destroy the Egyptians again for what they had done that first time. He gets angrier and angrier every time, so to speak. that's like that. Finally, the Yehuda will olam teshev. Yehuda will be inhabited forever. Yerushalayim l'dor b'dor. Yerushalayim will be there from generation to generation. They will not sin again. There will be a seat of government that sits in Yerushalayim that will be there. In the case of the Mamloni, case of Hashem Shochem B'tzion, their blood, right, I will cleanse them of their blood completely, but I will not cleanse them completely of what they have done. Hashem Shochem B'tzion, and Hashem will live in Zion. We all know that this refers to Rabbi Akiva and his Chaverov and all of his friends, the Asaru Gimalchus, that for the tzaddikim that have died and everything they did to those tzaddikim, those great men, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will not forget it. I will not forget what they've done. I'm not going to have that. Now, here's an idea. Marshall, there was a king who dwelled in his palace. An enemy invaded the kingdom, devastated the land, and banished all the inhabitants of that place. But the king came to terms with the invader and remained in his palace. Okay, from there, he dispatched envoys, who were instructed to locate all of his former subjects and provide for them. He didn't want them to forget their homeland. They should continue to yearn for it, even though they lived in other areas. One day, the enemy killed many of his subjects, and the killer said, if your majesty desires that they remember what they have lost, this way they'll remember it even better. Because they're dead now, they can't think of anything else. The king was angered. He said, true, I wanted them to remember their country, but why did you kill them? It was enough to make them suffer all the sufferings that you had had by being under you. The mashal refers to how HaKadosh Baruch Hu receives, how Bnei Yisrael receive what we have, our punishments through the nations of the world. The nations say, well, isn't it better if we kill the Jews completely and bring them up to you know, in heaven? Isn't that the better thing to do than to let them live and forget and to do bad things? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's not the point. The point is for them to do tshuva and to bring themselves back. I don't want you to kill them. That's not what they're there inside your hands for. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will never forgive you for what you've done to them. The blood that they have spilled will always be recompensed against their children. Whatever it means, we want to go with Gilgulim through the Gilgulim of those people who did evil things that we brought back to them.
The Gemara said they're not allowed to persecute the Jews too much.
That you're not allowed
to. Are not allowed to persecute the Jews too much. One of the Shalosh rules.
I know what you're referring to. I just can't think of the actual Gemara they're referring to.
There's two. It could be an olive or something.
By the Eretz Yisrael Gemara?
Yeah. So there were two that the Jews couldn't do and one that they couldn't do.
Right. And
because they
punish them over.
What's the second one? Lo yimrodu b'umos ha'olam.
Oh, you're right. When they're in galus. That is correct. Right. That's what it says. Kavi alfa kafi beis. Yeah, very, very good call. And that's a reference. We shouldn't do such things. That's the end of Yol. So Yol is an awesome parak. Talks about either destruction through the locusts or the destruction of the Babylonians and then the eventual redemption by the times of Mashiach, like a little thing that goes through. Very different from Hosea. Notice the major differences. Hosea was all talking about what was going on during his time, referring to how the Jews were, what they were doing, his whole thing with the harlots, etc., and then eventually, right, how they're going to be destroyed and what's going to happen by the times of Babel when they come in. Yoel is all about what's happening right there, possibly referring to Babel, but the end of days, going through Mashiach at the very end of days, is an awesome little line. Now we're getting into Amos. Amos is a very, very different type of person. We're going to talk about him and where he was next time, but there's quite a bit all about Amos. Even the first psukim describe him, which is weird for the Treyasser to do, to describe who he was and what he used to do. Talk about that next week, guys.